Hey everybody, welcome to our Team Time show on the very last day of August 2016. It's August 2nd, just kidding, August 31st. And it's Wednesday of all days, hump day, so we have a wonderful show for you for this last day of August. Kind of symbolically the last day of summer, though it certainly isn't, but it's going to be a changing world as summer turns to fall. This is one of my better segues. And it's a changing world in learning, too. And we're going to talk about all the differences out there and how we need to prepare students for what's going to be there when they graduate. And part of that deal is project-based learning. And we're going to talk about a new report from the folks at GettingSmart.com, and also they were helped by the Buck Institute. And we've got Bonnie Lathram, who's from Getting Smart, and she's going to tell us about their new report, which you can read, Preparing Students for a Project-Based World. We're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org, and we're going to tweet it out over at EduTalkRadio. We've already done that with a direct link, and we'll do it again when we're done. We archive every show over at our website, again, education-talkradio.org, as soon as it's finished. And if you scroll down, you'll see every show we've ever done. You take your pick. We get a lot of listens to older shows. It's amazing. You know, 2,000 listens a night. It's great. So at any rate, let me bring on Bonnie. We're going to talk about preparing students for a project-based world. I think I said I'm Larry Jacobs, but in case I didn't, I am. Hi, Bonnie. It's Larry.
Hi there. Hi, Larry.
How are you? How are you today out in Washington?
I'm doing great.
Yeah.
I'm doing awesome. Glad to be still in summertime here.
It's the psychological end of summer today. It's not the seasonal end.
That's right. And you know, yeah. I love back to school time. I was a teacher for 8 years, so this is like my favorite time of year. Great.
Good for you. Do you have kids now, or do you have children?
I do. I've got a 4.5-year-old, so she's actually not starting kindergarten until 2017, and then I have a almost 2-year-old.
Oh wow! And he or she won't be starting until much later. I thought you were getting the kids ready for school. I remember buying school bags.
No, they got it.
The old days, buying school bags. Hopalong Cassidy. Those days will come, Bonnie. Those days will come.
That's right.
Yeah, you're a director at GettingSmart.com, and just tell everybody what that is.
So GettingSmart.com is a media channel where we publish blog content as well as videos and podcasts. We have about 400,000 page views a month, so check out GettingSmart.com. And then Getting Smart is also a learning design firm where we offer advisory and consulting services.
Do you do that for educators and schools and school districts?
Absolutely. We work with school districts and nonprofit organizations, foundations, ed tech companies, and businesses. Yeah.
Very cool. And who else, by the way, is involved with you, Bonnie Lathram, at Getting Smart?
So Tom Vander Ark is our CEO, and he's also the co-author of a recent publication that you mentioned in the introduction, Preparing Students for a Project-Based World. We also worked with Bob Lenz, who's the executive director of Buck Institute for Education, which you also mentioned in the introduction.
Yes, and they're both fine people. And you're working there. You're a director over there. It's GettingSmart.com. And by the way, Bonnie tweets at B.E. Lathram, L-A-T-H-R-A-M. B.E. What's your middle name, Elizabeth?
It is, yes.
Oh, there
Elizabeth.
You go. Bingo.
Bonnie Elizabeth.
Got that one.
Could have
been Elaine.
Yes.
I went for Elizabeth. B.E. Lathram, at B.E. Lathram. Okay. We're trying here. The new publication just came out last week. It's called Preparing Students for a Project-Based World. And indeed, that's a good thing because that's what it's becoming. And we'll talk about this in great detail. What made you write it? What forces are behind you and Bob and Tom writing it?
So about 30% of Americans currently are engaged in freelance or project-based work. Many people are sort of piecing together their income and their work through, multiple income streams.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing things
sure.
like, you know, freelancing. I mean, this is just sort of a reality, and I'm certainly seeing this just anecdotally with friends of mine. And then we can sort of see it when we're, reading things in the business media, New York Times, Fast Company, Entrepreneur Inc. Anyone who's working in the tech field can see that this is happening. By 2020, there are estimates that up to 40% of Americans will be in the freelance economy. And when you talk to young people, those that are in college right now, they also get this. Yep. It resonates with them that not only are they being prepared for sort of the, you know, what would have been in the older days, like, you know, having one career for 30 years. We know those days are gone. They are gone. No longer are we even preparing someone for, like, let's say six jobs over the course of a lifetime.
Right.
What we are now, which is probably sort of where I am at, but my kids, who are, you know, as I mentioned, 4 and 1, I mean, we're preparing them for 6 jobs at once. People are definitely going to be sort of multitasking, doing lots of different things. And the fact is, anyone who says that they can predict what our economy is going to look like in 20 years is also probably doesn't have the crystal ball. Technological changes are happening so quickly. And so one of the, you know, big reasons we wanted to write this is to shine a big light on the new economy, and then in transition, talk about not just the new economy and the impact that's going to have on careers, but what are schools doing about this? The way in which school design really focused on teaching students how to manage their work in projects. It was interesting. I was at the University of Washington, which is located in Seattle, where I live. I was there in the early part of this year, and I was talking to about 30 people who wanted to become teachers, and they were undergraduates who were taking a course led by a woman named Kimberly Mitchell, who's an amazing professor there, called Teaching as a Profession. And as you and I both know, and I think I've listened to a show on your site about kind of the challenges with getting people to become teachers and the teaching profession in general. It's really interesting and inspiring to be there because I was a teacher for a long time and wanted to sort of encourage anyone to go into the field. But I happened to be talking and asking the question to the people in the audience, how much of your university work is in projects? And most of the students said it was still, you know, sort of lecture style that they preferred their work to actually be in projects, but that it just wasn't as much as it should be. And that's a real missed opportunity. And we ended up having a discussion about that with the people who are in college, and they get it. They know what the economic realities are. And then if there's this disconnect between the economic realities and what's happening in universities and also in schools and, you know, the K-12 system, you know, what are some practical things we can do to shift that? And this publication is the first in 3 publications that's exploring that.
And people can look at it. Where would they be able to find it? Do they just go to Getting Smart, or what happens? Just tell them.
Yeah, so it's super easy. Go to gettingsmart.com, and in the tab, click on publications, and you'll see it. It's called Preparing Students for a Project-Based World.
Yeah, and let me, with the college students, okay, not only are they being taught by their education professors to teach project-based learning. I know they're not doing it, which is a mistake as far as I'm concerned, okay, because people learn by example on how to teach, okay? We don't want them to lecture anymore. We want them to use all the facilities possible. But are they being trained to teach project-based learning? Did you ask that question when you were at UW?
You know, it's interesting because we're actually in the middle of exploring a lot around teacher preparation, both preparing new teachers, and then also professional development once someone is a teacher. So I think it's all very much to say that there are certainly some bright spots in teacher preparation, and then there's also, you know, massive room for improvement. And we're actually working on a second publication that'll be called Preparing Teachers for a Project-Based World, and it comes out in November. And it gets to the very heart of your great question.
Let's do a show on that. We'll schedule that in today.
I would love that. And,
we're going to do that.
Emily is leading that, and so we'll get her connected to you. That's great.
That's perfect. Okay, PBL. When I went to school, it was PBR, Pabst Blue Ribbon. Now it's PBL. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. But it is key stuff, and all of this boils down. You know, schools were created, well, A, to promote democracy, so we had a learned population. But when it settled into its current model, so to speak, or its model through the 20th century, it was geared to create an industrialized society, and kids went to Kodak and stayed there 50 years and got their gold watch and retired. Okay? And that was basically the job market, and that's why school was fairly regimented. All right? Because that's what they were preparing you for. Even if you worked at IBM, it was regimented. All right? But times have changed, and you guys have hit the nail right on the head. All right? And if we don't change the way kids learn, to prepare, which is the purpose of school, to prepare them for their careers, we have a catchphrase, college and career ready, but that's what we've always supposedly been doing. Okay? If we don't change the way this is happening, we are going to screw the upcoming generations, your kids. We have to this system must change as we look at where these kids are going to be. And frankly, we don't even know where they're going to be because we haven't figured out. They'll be holograms with just brains floating in space. I mean, it's just incredible. You are dead on right. And preparing students for a project-based world and the next one, preparing teachers for a project-based world, this is so important. And frankly, I got to tell you, I think the teacher education colleges are a little behind the time. Bonnie, that's my spiel and rant for today.
I love it. I was nodding at everything you were saying.
I mean, we're fighting a tide that doesn't need to be a tide at all. Okay, you know, you when you wrote me, and I have a little cheat sheet here. You wrote about this new economy. That's what we talked about, and that is without question changing. But you also use the words, and I'm trying to figure out how the two go together when we're talking about project-based learning. Use the word inequities. Okay, and I know there are certainly inequities in U.S. education. There should be, but there are. How does that fit in to project-based learning?
Well, so I worked at a project-based learning school for 8 years in the Big Picture Learning Network. I worked at a school called Highline Big Picture, which is Highline School District, public high school just south of Seattle.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And we served a bunch of students. We had a population of about 70% free and reduced lunch. Many students that came to our school starting in the ninth grade were very disengaged in school and, you know, contemplating, you know, dropping out or didn't really have a clear pathway. And they were, you know, grade levels behind in reading and in math. Mm. And that's just, you know, heartbreaking. And so one way to create a strong level of engagement, you know, we want kids that are, you know, joyful and passionate and excited to be at school, or maybe excited too ambitious, but at least, you know, showing up, attending, paying attention, and, you know, not the quintessential have the hoodie on with the headphones sitting in the back of the classroom. We know that model, and it just doesn't, it's not working for so many kids.
Yeah.
So when we look at achievement, and we look at test scores, it's students that come from impoverished backgrounds or their, you know, parents are less educated, just aren't performing well in the current system. And project-based learning, and I'll also use the word, you know, real-world learning,
mm-hmm.
Opportunities for students to get out and have internships outside of school, opportunities for students to experience career and technical education preparation, especially at the middle school and high school level. It's just we've seen, and the numbers suggest, certainly at Big Picture Learning and then also at other school networks that are doing similar work, that, you know, you can reduce or eliminate the achievement gap. And so what are those ways to create high levels of engagement for all students?
Mm-hmm.
And project-based learning is
good.
I mean, so you know, there's such a strong rationale. There's a connection between, yes, this new economy, but there's also this, you know, equity rationale to reach all kids. And certainly we saw that at my school.
And I'll tell you, you know, project-based learning, you're right. You're right on everything you said. And this is a great phrasing, project-based learning. Now I'm going to ask the $64,000 question. There's hundreds of teachers literally listening to the show. Okay, 1,000 more or so will be listening as time goes by, 2,000 more, whatever the case may be. We use that term PBL, project-based learning. how are they supposed to do it if nobody's ever taught them how to do it? And it's key. Bonnie?
It is key. So our friends at Buck Institute for Education actually offer services, and many school districts sign up to do their programs and begin doing professional development to kind of get there. And there's also obviously a lot of resources online. Many are at BIE.org and also at gettingsmart.com. Mm-hmm. But, simple ideas and something that maybe, it's back to school time, so let's just talk directly to teachers about something that they could do, which is shadow a student. So perhaps talk to your administrator and see if there's a half day or a full day where you can pick one student and actually experience school through their perspective. There's a whole movement to do that, which is hashtag shadow a student. And
I never heard of that. A new thing. Thank you.
Yeah, it's awesome. Check it out. There was a whole month of February and a week dedicated last year, and it'll happen again this year, where people were shadowing kids and then seeing school through their experience. And, there's some light bulbs when you do that, right? And then probably you can see, tweaks and hacks and little things that you can do to sort of encourage projects. And also, project-based learning doesn't have to mean like totally flipping your entire classroom upside down and around the world. It can mean sort of starting, just do it, the start small and then go big from there. The other thing is that the more, and again, this is something just super actionable beginning of the school year type stuff, but the more you can have students presenting their work publicly. So let's say you have them do something at the beginning of the year that's like a Who Am I project, or, here's one we did, five things in my pocket. Have students present five things that kind of they carry around with them in their backpack that have meaning. And I remember one kid, this is a high school kid, we did like the five things in my backpack on one of the first days of school, and he had carried around a SpongeBob pillow in his backpack. And it was so cute. Like, here's this like 6'3" kid, that was like walking around with a SpongeBob pillow in his backpack. It's just adorable. And you learn so much about kids from them doing stuff like that. And that's also something where they can get comfortable starting to present their work, and who they are, so that, later in the year, you have them present something that's, really rigorous, something they've been working really hard on, and maybe a book project or maybe a career exploration project. And maybe you're upping the ante and they're presenting in front of their parents, or they're presenting in front of, community members or the principal, or, maybe their mentor who's in the business community. So start with those little actionable like ways of getting students to present and talk about their work, and you can kind of ramp it up from there.
Let me ask you, we talk about project-based learning, and in my mind, all right, by the way, I hear the kids in the background, hope they're having a good time, everything all right back there?
They're with Dad. Yes.
Oh, okay, cool. I just wanted to make
doing
sure.
Great.
We're very informal here, so I just wanted to make sure everything is cool.
Oh,
yeah.
That's funny. My husband's a firefighter, and he just got home about 45 minutes ago. And normally I work in the office, but I knew I was doing this, and so I'm at home, and I think they're having a good time.
It's cool. I just wanted to be sure everything was. I don't want you to feel like. You know what I mean? Okay.
They're doing great.
I was thinking. And I'm thinking back to like chemistry class and biology class. We used to dissect the frog. We used to, do a chemistry experiment, et cetera. Was that old-time project-based learning? But that was only in science class. And let me just ask, does PBL work best in elementary? Does it work best in secondary? Does it work in math? Okay, and do those old things, like I just said, do they count as PBL in the old world?
We actually had a math class that was separate from a lot of our project-based learning class at my school. And that was because so many kids came to our school with math deficiencies. And so I do think there is room for specific classes to help students that maybe aren't necessarily project-based learning. You'll find in wonderful schools across the United States that they implement this in a variety of ways. And I think the intention behind it is what's most important, and that it doesn't, there isn't maybe necessarily any right way. In terms of you talking about like frog dissection, and I certainly did that in my science class too.
We all did.
And I remember, so the difference between frog dissecting a frog, which I do remember being told, like, okay, you have to cut into this formaldehyde frog. And I didn't have a choice. I mean, I just had to do it to get my grade, and it was disgusting and experimental and all those things. But I don't remember, like, very much about it other than, like, the smell and just the feet having to do it. But the difference is...
In Coeban College, we had to do the fetal pig. Talk about disgusting.
Okay, so a fetal pig.
And I was a history major. This is how bad it was. So I feel your pain.
I was a history major, too. That's interesting. So that is not my thing. But I do remember in the seventh grade, the frog dissecting. But in the ninth grade, I had to build a mousetrap car that moved in a physical science class. And that felt more like maybe what PBL is, because it was super open-ended. Not only that, we had to all 30 of us go out into this huge hallway. And we actually had to publicly show that our mouse car works.
Wow.
And I think mine, like, kind of, I don't remember all the physics behind it, but I know that my mom ended up having to help me because I didn't,
it's all right.
I would not say that I was overly science motivated. And anyway, that felt more public, more maybe authentic, more like something that might actually be useful, like, later in life. I don't think I ever thought I was going to be a doctor or anything, so I don't know that I felt like the frog dissecting was. I think the key there is just the authenticity, student voice and choice in the project, and then having some sort of a public audience or purpose, and then feeling, you know, that feeling of craftsmanship and feeling deeply invested in what you're doing is a huge part of high-quality project-based learning.
You know, that's a great point. Deeply invested in your learning is what it's about. And do me a favor, Bonnie, if you can, in your words, define for everybody project-based learning or a project-based world. But define project-based learning.
It is an instructional design and pedagogy that purpose is to create high levels of engagement while also teaching 21st century skills. That includes core content. So in addition to core content, focus on that communication, presenting your work, having student voice and choice, creating something that is authentic and has an authentic purpose, and teaching those collaboration skills. You know, one myth is that project-based learning is always about group work, and that's not the case. Certainly, we want to prepare students to work in... we want to prepare students to work in groups because the fact is, we talked earlier in the show about 40% of Americans by 2020 will be freelancing. Here's the other reality. An additional 40% that actually do enjoy full-time employment will be working on teams and in projects.
Right.
So gone are the
Good
days
point.
Where you're sitting in some, like, I mean, you're not going to be sitting necessarily in some cubicle working by yourself. You may be collaborating with somebody in another country. You know, and you often will be collaborating with people digitally. That means being, like, up to speed on, you know, digital communication, email, you know, instant messaging, ways to, you know, project manage across time zones and countries. And so the fact of the matter is, if the more that we can have students experience what that is like in school, that's going to be beneficial for them. At the same time, we also, you know, don't want to have all group projects that, I mean, we want students to be able to manage. I mean, if you think about college is one big fat individual project. And yes, you may have a counselor or a mentor or an advisor in your college, and you may have teachers that are supporting you, and you may have friends that are also supporting you. But in the end, ultimately, what's going to get you to that degree is going to be your ability to manage kind of all your coursework, your classes, your syllabus, your homework, your emails, your relationship with your professors. So we want a mix of what I would call independent, you know, self-driven projects along with group projects. The other challenge with, you know, group projects is the grading situation, right? Like, so, you know, students are often worried, like, am I going to be graded based on the performance of someone else? And so the teacher really can set up a group project well to make sure that there's individual participation grades and that people in the group are responsible for different pieces. I saw this done super successfully at a school called Aviation High School in the Highline School District where I was just visiting. And they've got this great class called Flight by Design. And the teacher, Mr. Joshi, who leads the class, actually puts the students in teams And he runs them. He used to work at Microsoft. So those teams function like teams at Microsoft. And there's a project manager and
that is
other
great.
People who have various responsibilities. It's super cool.
It's super, it's super
the more
cool.
That we can, yeah, mimic that. It's
yeah,
great.
And Mr. Josie, is that his name? Did you say?
Joshi.
Say it again.
Yeah, Nick Joshi.
Josie, that's what I thought. Congratulations, Nick, for doing such a good job. And that brings up my next question. Okay, we're in a project, and I agree with you. I mean, it's turning into a project-based world, all right? And we all know where the economy is going, and I agree with you 100% on that, all right? And Nick, the example you just gave in this terrific class, okay, worked at Microsoft, okay? He's able to take that experience, okay, and translate it now that he's a teacher, okay? But many teachers, you and I think, we went to a teacher education school. We didn't work anywhere else, okay, and we became teachers, all right? But the world of education is a different world. It's a world with tenure, for one thing. It's a world with unions, okay, where you can go down a whole list. How is that world, and a world with healthcare benefits, I might add, so how is that world able to look at this new world of their kids and come up with these things and get them ready to work in the new economy? I didn't mean to make that sound as serious as it is, but it is a serious subject. I mean, you know, you look at Nick. He worked at Microsoft. He gets it. Okay.
It's interesting. Yeah, he does. He does get it. It's interesting too, because we interviewed him for a Getting Smart podcast, which you can find on our website. That came out earlier this year. And in it, he discussed how much it had helped him that he had this previous career. And to your point earlier, you know, I mean, we're obviously in the middle of exploring this, and Emily Liebtag on our team is heading up the Preparing Teachers for a Project-Based World. We'd actually invite people who want to share their experiences about how you do prepare teachers for this, because it is such a huge topic, to use on Twitter the hashtag project-based and join in the conversation. We always welcome guest blogs on gettingsmart.com. Email to do that is editor@gettingsmart.com, and you can always put in the title project-based, and it'll get to the right person. The other thing is, you know, professional development. As I mentioned, BIE.org offers professional development for teachers. I know that I'll be at the upcoming iNACL conference, which is the iNACL Blended and Online Learning Symposium. Yeah, will you be there?
I don't know yet. Is it in San Antonio? Am I correct?
It is. It's October 25th or 28th in San Antonio, and it's a great conference. And
oh, I know it is.
iNACL is just terrific. Yeah. I'm just taking advantage of opportunities to learn more if you're in the teaching field, and then you know, again, kind of the actionable and implementable things. If you feel like as a teacher it sounds so overwhelming, how would I ever get started? You may not ever get started. So some of it is just figuring out what the action steps are and getting started soon.
This is a changing world, and you are so, you and Tom and everybody are so dead on right. We've got to make these changes, and we got to make them quick. We got to be like raptors, not brontosauruses. Okay, we got to be able to move quick. Okay,
absolutely.
Because, these kids are graduating, and we keep putting it off, and that's why I'm never mad at them, but I feel that a lot of the education schools are really falling behind. Okay, and they have to be the ones who lead by example. And if you said it before, if those students want project-based learning, they want to be engaged in their learning, the professors have to teach like that, not a lecture. They have to teach like that so that future teachers learn by example from their professors how to teach, how people learn. That's my second rant of the day.
You know, it's so true. And the other thing I would say, too, is we're huge fans of field trips at Getting Smart. And Tom and a colleague of mine on the team have visited dozens of schools in the last year. And I think seeing this in action is so huge. And so for education leaders and for people who are in kind of decision-making around budgets and travel, like ways, and it doesn't mean, you know, going across the country, but even in your own area, you know, what are some schools and going and learning from schools who are immersed in some of this and seeing it firsthand, and especially, you know, talking to students. I mean, they're going to be at any school. If you're only hearing from the adults when you're visiting, that's,
yep,
there's something amiss. You know, are students leading the tour, or the, you know, are students, is there a student panel where you're getting to learn about their projects and hear from them? I mean, the student voice piece is critical. At the school where I worked, anytime an adult visited our school, a student led the school tour.
Nice. And actually,
and that was always like the highlight. Yeah.
Yeah. Just yesterday, I did a show with Amgen Foundation, okay, and also the group, you probably know them, Change the Equation, and they just did a students speak about STEM survey, okay, and that's what the show was about. It was what the students talking about their science classes and their STEM classes. And the difference between what teachers were saying and what the students were saying. And my standard line is, if you got to be like, well, I hate to say it, you got to be like Walmart. Okay, they listen to their customers. You got to be like Bed Bath and Beyond, Amazon. They listen to their customers, and if they don't please the customers, people go somewhere else. Well, kids can't go somewhere else, so their mind goes somewhere else. Okay,
we got to find out
what they like, so that we can make it engaging for them. I'm so old, I was born before the telegraph, okay? It's just unbelievable. You know, it's just wild. You know, one other thing, back to school. And by the way, people, you can get started on this stuff right away, okay? GettingSmart.com is a good place to go. Buck Institute is really good as well. It's back to school time, okay? What can parents do these days? How do parents work, A, with their children, and B, with the schools to encourage this type of thing? Do they even know about it? Parents.
Yeah. So, parents asking really great questions. We have a checklist on GettingSmart.com, which is a parent checklist for promoting and encouraging students in their learning. It's also an infographic, so we can share that out after show, but it's on GettingSmart.com. The other thing is just for parents to be as informed as possible about what's going on in school. Go to school and, you know, encourage that your student actually present their work rather than having a teacher conference, have a student-led conference. So your student, start as early as kindergarten. I mean, I would love nothing more than my daughter to, in kindergarten, and I think she just naturally would do this anyway, but like to show me around the room and tell me all the things that she's working on. And then, you know, maybe hear a little bit from the teacher, but much more prefer to hear it from her and then also ask her a lot of questions. I mean, as a parent, the, you know, most powerful two questions you can ask your child are, what is your best work? Or alternate version, is this your best work? And let your student answer honestly. And then the second one is asking, you know, as a parent, asking your child, starting at an early age, or it's never too late, what's your vision for your future? And the key with asking those questions is to listen and allow for pause and quiet space. What students will often do when you ask them questions like that is they'll do one of two things, either answer really quickly, I don't know, and that's their way of pushing back on you, right? I don't know. Mom, are you asking about my vision? You know, or I don't know. Well, Mom, come on. You know, what do you mean this is my best work? Or that's a silly question. I'm not going to answer that. And the best thing you can do as a parent, and this is also doubles for teachers, is ask those questions and then allow for silence, like up to 10 seconds, super uncomfortable. And then if they answer immediately with, I don't know, just ask again. And are really allowed to like listen to what your child has to say. The other thing parents could do is be intentional at home. You know, how are you using like free time? You know, monitoring television or electronics that's just kind of time-wasting, encouraging ways that they can learn things that you're working on with you or do something intentional with you as opposed to kind of just mind-numbingly watching, like, hours and hours worth of movies on the weekend or something.
I got to tell you something. What you just said about silence, I got to tell you something, Bonnie. What you just said about silence is one of the oldest sales tricks in the world. The old joke, you say nothing, you just wait and let the client talk. And eventually, 90% of the time, they'll talk themselves out of the objection they just presented. They say, I don't like your Liberty Block. I don't like the pen you guys manufacture. And you just sit there and don't say a word. They will fill the gap and start talking. And usually they'll talk themselves out of it. It's just human nature. It's the same way with a kid. I don't know, Mom. Just sit there. They do know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They'll fill the gap.
Yeah, it's so true. And I love it. I didn't know that about sales. But
oh, yeah.
What's interesting about I don't know. So when I taught high school, I learned by was probably like my third or fourth year, because the first couple of years of teaching, you don't know what you're doing. But, you know, I started getting better, you know, as a teacher by like year five. I was like, oh, I think I actually feel like I'm doing a good job at this. Yeah, exactly. And then the I don't know thing, it became a banned word in our classroom. Like, you just couldn't respond to anyone's question with an I don't know. And even if you hadn't learned it yet, that was your response. Like, let me think about that. I haven't learned that yet. I'm going to work on that.
Mm-hmm.
So even that reframe, and parents can use that with their kids too.
Yeah. It's all human nature. You're just working with human nature. It's simple. But this project-based learning thing, it's on gettingsmart.com under projects, preparing students for a project-based world. And I cannot say how important this is, because Bonnie summed it up right at the beginning of the show. By 2020, 40% of the American workforce will be working project by project. They won't have the job at General Motors or DuPont for 50 years, or IBM or whoever. Okay? The world's changing. Okay? We got to get kids ready for it. Okay? We got to get teachers ready to teach it now. Right, Bonnie? You got me psyched.
That's right. That's right. You know? And head to Twitter and follow @getting_smart and follow along
@
project based and # deeper learning. And you can learn ways to contribute, especially given what Larry's been talking about with the preparation of teachers for a project based world. We'd love to have anyone that wants to contribute to that. We also have another campaign running around place based education, # place based ed. So you can check that out too.
You got me on that one. What's place based ed? Help me. I don't know. I didn't hear that one yet.
Oh, yeah, using the power of place to learn. So it's connected in the sense that even when we talked about internships and students using out-of-school opportunities to learn, and place-based ed can happen anywhere, and it's about being intentional about learning at place. So we're also writing and thinking a lot about that.
You know, I just saw a thing, and this is to talk about teacher education, on the PBS NewsHour last night. They're taking teachers, okay, who want to teach in south side of Chicago, urban education, and they're putting them in the south side of Chicago, having them live with families for 6 weeks, get to know the neighborhood, meet the kids. It's kind of the same thing, place-based education. You learn by being in the place. I love it.
I love that. I love that. Oh, my God. That takes, like, the home visit thing to a new level. I haven't heard that. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was just on PBS News. I think it's called Step Up. I think it's the name of the program, but it's on the south side of Chicago through an organization, I guess, called Step Up. And it was pretty cool.
Nice.
Okay. African-American folks. These are white kids from the suburbs. They want to be teachers in urban education, and they're living in the neighborhood as part of a program prior to school starting for 6 weeks, getting to know the kids,
fantastic.
Know the neighborhood, know the whole thing. It's really pretty cool. I got to tell you.
Wow.
All this stuff matters.
Great.
Bonnie, we got to go. I'd love to do another show with you folks on the place-based learning if you want to. And then I also want to do preparing teachers for a project-based world. So could you, if you get that other lady in touch with me, and then you and I can do the show or whoever for the place-based if you want to do.
Fantastic. Would love that, Larry. Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right, now go make lunch for your Oh, no, it's only 10 in the morning there. Never mind. I was going to say go make lunch for your firefighter husband.
I think they just left to go to swim lessons, so all's quiet now. Yeah.
Well, that's good. He works
Thanks
a lot
so
with
much.
Water, so that's good. He's a good person to take for swimming lessons.
That's right.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Great. Thanks, Bonnie. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bonnie Lathram, Lathram, is a director at Getting Smart, Tom Vander Ark's company. Gettingsmart.com. They tweet at Getting Smart. Can you hear me? And Bonnie tweets at BELATHRAM. Her last name, Lathram, BE, Bonnie Elizabeth. All right, we're going to try the show at education-talkradio.org. Tweet it out at EduTalkRadio. Again, gettingsmart.com, preparing students for a project-based world. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is of Education Talk Radio. Thank you, Bonnie. This was great. We'll set up those other shows. Everybody else, thanks for listening.